This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Traditionally, the media has blurred the line between public and private lives, and the digital age has almost eliminated that distinction entirely. Perhaps the most prominent example of how the internet has made the private public is pornography. My next guest studies America's multi-billion-dollar porn industry and its intersection with the media. Richard Conte examines the social and political implications of pornography. He's a professor of media and technology studies in the communication department at UNC Chapel Hill. He's going to give a talk at UNC on Friday called Pornography, Political Expression, and Free Speech. But first joins me on The State of Things. Richard Conte, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about this, the idea of sort of what pornography is. I suppose we should start there. You know, Justice Potter Stewart famously said, "I know it when I see it." Now, your research, you know, obviously you need a more thorough definition. So what were you talking about when you write about pornography?
Well, I start from the strict sense of the term, which is that it has to do with the reportage of prostitutes on their work, the recording and reportage of prostitutes on their work. But I think that one of the really important things about pornography right now is that it's very hard to say what it is. There's lots of explicit sexual representation out there in the media, and it is very important in the way the media now works. But the borders around what used to be relatively easy to define, I think maybe once as pornography, have become very fuzzy, given the ways that the media has changed, especially since the internet, I think. So I think one of the important things is that it's hard to say what pornography is.
But it's interesting that you link it to prostitution. I would take it back to almost the etymology of the word itself. I mean, it's a graphic depiction of sexual behavior that in some ways excites the people who aren't participating. So which may or may not be prostitution. So what's the connection with prostitution?
Right, a depiction of sexual commerce. And I think that the question of commerce, the nature of what the transactions fundamentally involved in sexual behavior are one of the things that are really at the heart of the concept of pornography.
And so how does that play into, because again, if you think of the effect of it, you know, whether or not you think you're viewing a commercial transaction or perhaps an intimate consensual transaction without any commercial value, it might have the same effect on an individual.
Right. One of the things that seems to really adhere to pornography, the way I think of it, is the possibility that there has been money transacted. Mm. And that seems to be one of the key definitional, the key things that does define it.
Yeah, and certainly it is a multi-billion-dollar industry worldwide. And you draw correlations between the anonymity of modern amateur porn on the internet and the industrial era, the whole rise of industrialism. What's the connection there?
Well, I mean, pornography seems to, the way we think of it now, seems to really be a product of the modern industrial era and what we now call mass media, the early version of which would have been print technology. And the thing about print technology was that it did make possible ways of speaking in public, which were, though they were connected to people's actual names, could also be anonymous in certain ways. You could have the anonymous author. You could have all of those things. You also had, like, really important figures of anonymity in the early modern city, like Jack the Ripper, the search for Jack the Ripper. The prostitute is one of those figures of anonymity. So one of the things that is interesting about the history of pornography since the 70s, since the era of film pornography, is that it has worked fundamentally through star systems that are kind of like the Hollywood star system in certain ways, but sort of different. But it has also worked continuously with these figures of these kind of anonymous run-of-the-mill people who have become maybe more important with the internet in the way pornography actually operates. So there's a kind of decelebrification that may have happened.
And the anonymity is sort of one of the virtues, if I can use that word, of pornography. In other words, one of the reasons anybody would engage in pornographic behavior or consumption is the fact that nobody has to know what you're doing.
Right, except that especially now, someone will potentially know what you're doing because of the ways in which information technology technology now works, even in terms of accessing and retrieving things, searching for things, etc.
So what do you make of this? And again, this transition between a star system and sort of the move toward sort of amateur pornography that has become, in a sense, at least popular and replaced that star system. What does that mean? What does that tell us?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think that there are ways in which, one of the things it does is that it makes clear that it's really necessary to rethink pornography, and it's really become possible to rethink pornography and all of the earlier discussions about the ways that it works in our lives. This has really become possible and necessary since the internet. And a lot of the earlier discussions of pornography, especially since the 70s, were based on like ideas about things like beauty ideals, which were very much drawn from Hollywood and advertising, and which were very much drawn from the ideas that only certain people get to be stars, and those people tend to look a certain way, and all of that. With the way the pornography now works, you could say that we have more of a diversity of people. And it doesn't seem to necessarily convey the same sorts of necessarily limited values to its users than it might have seemed to in an earlier era of different media.
Part of your work, too, centers on looking at the intersection of pornography and media, sort of the broader media and more conventional media, although it's a tricky concept because first you have to define media. But what's the relationship there?
What's the relationship?
Between sort of mass media in general and the pornography industry in particular.
Pornography seems to be essentially connected to the media the way that it now works. It might have been possible at one point that a piece of literature, for instance, could be considered pornographic, and we had all of those obscenity cases involving Ulysses, Tropic of Capricorn, Howl, all of those works, which did turn around obscenity and therefore involved in certain ways pornography. But nowadays, really, the normative materials of the pornographic are really moving image media with sound. So classifying a piece of literature, just writing, pornographic now, seems like it's difficult to even really do.
Well, what about media images in general, advertising, news? We see certainly a deliberate effort to use images of beauty and, I think, sexual provocation in advertising, in news, all of which is meant to deliver an audience without even blushing.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why pornography is important, precisely because the borders around where it stops and starts have become really fuzzy. Even its relationship to art. I mean, the integration of pornographic materials into art happened in pop art in the 1960s in a really rigorous and important way. So those borders have really been broken down for many years now.
One of the sort of important questions around pornography is the way it disadvantages women, the impact on women, certainly from a feminist critique. The anti-porn movement is one that says this is yet another way in which social order degrades women and we have to do something about it.
Yes, and that is probably true in some ways. But most of the scholars who've paid very close attention to pornography since then, especially scholars based in the humanities, whose work has largely been designed to correct for certain assumptions that have characterized the social scientific media research and have in some sense characterized some of the research that purports to be scientific in the way that it talks about pornography. These people in the humanities, their work has focused on the ways in which if pornography does do differential harms to women, it probably also does things that are useful to women at the same time. And, also focused on the possibility that pornography really does very different things for different groups of people and does different things for even the same people at different points in time.
Well, let's talk about it as the utility for women. How could it be useful for women?
Well, for instance, it may be the case that, that pornography does differential harm to women, but in whatever set of ways. However, for example, there might be ways in which people are using pornography in the first place to get away from the very mandates for good sex, better sex, the ways in which those mandates can actually be oppressive and pose difficulties in our lives. People might be using it partly to get away from those things. And so if there are burdens that are placed on women by the way the media work in general, if they do work in ways in general that, that place burdens on them, there are ways in which pornography actually can also provide an escape from such a thing. This is one of the things that's interesting about pornography.
So I can see that sort of within that framework, you can see how there's a kind of give and take. But then you take a sort of a giant step forward or take a big step back and look at this as an industry, as a kind of capitalist market, and you see yet again women are exploited. So for whatever the impact, you have a big money-making industry that's going to abuse a minority or people who have a subordinate role in social order.
Yes, and that's absolutely true. But that's not the that's not all that pornography is, according to the scholars who have really looked at it.
And what you also point out that gay porn is another way in which we can understand or view pornography, and it gives us a different and perhaps a deeper understanding.
Yes, these discussions about what pornography is and the way that it works in general tend to be really biased toward the toward heterosexuality and toward the heterosexual. And there are senses in which, I mean, you know, there's this this general thing that's happening where lots of people are declaring lots of things to be epidemics and public health crises. And one of those things is pornography. And in some sense, that may be true. My general kind of approach to thinking about this is to assume that most of the things that people say are in some ways true, and there is some truth in them. But there are senses in which, if you think about the case of gay men in particular since the 1970s, the explosion of pornography since, in particular, the video era with the 80s, has been used and it's come to occupy a very particular place in gay culture precisely for reasons connected to people's survival. I mean, people have used this as a safer sex strategy, essentially, in the context of the AIDS epidemic. And when you take that into account, you see that there are ways in which, if this is a public health crisis, there are other ways in which this is also, you know, helping people survive.
You also challenge the notion that pornography is an addiction, or at least a drug-like behavior. What do you make of that?
Well, the question is what an addiction is and how an addiction is defined. Some of the work on pornography that's been really interesting and important since the 1990s has talked about it as though it might in fact be addictive, but it might in fact be addictive mostly in the ways that things like beauty and art are addictive. And if you start to talk about those things as addictions per se, you might be expanding the category of addiction, just like the category of, say, an epidemic or a public health crisis, to a point where it might not really, you know, you might be doing more harm than good.
Well, but also, anytime you talk about addiction, if you're smart, you'll take one step back again and say, look, what is it about, because addiction is in one way or another an adaptation or maladaptation mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. a social order, mm-hmm. which itself may be maladapted to whatever, providing privilege for certain groups, whatever social order really does. So in some ways, taking a look at those behaviors that seem to be addictive or have many of the markers of addiction is also could be a way of looking at just how functional or dysfunctional your social order is if a lot of people find this a remedy, right?
Exactly. And you know, I think that this is a very important, this issue of addiction is very important. And there are challenges to where addiction stops and starts that are going on right now in the realm of sex addiction in general. And there is a lot of talk about pornography and addictiveness. And I want to be very clear that I think that again, like everything else, I think that there is potentially some truth to this. I've taught a class on pornography for many years at UNC Chapel Hill, and I regularly have students approaching me about this issue, and I tell them, well, you know what, if you want to try to sort through, you know, like what's going on for you and how you feel about this, you watch pornography, stop watching it for a month and come back and tell me, do you feel different? And generally when they do, they say, yeah, oh my God, I feel different. So there's something going on.
So it does at least point to something, which gets me to my next question. Your work inherently is interdisciplinary. Which again makes it all the more fascinating. Do you see more work in this area and more interest in other disciplines in looking at the various ways in which pornography can instruct us in various fields?
Yes, I think that thinking interdisciplinarily is tremendously important because different disciplines, both within the way universities work, so this influences the way the pornography is talked about in universities, but this also has a tremendous influence on the way just general public discussions about pornography tend to be framed and tend to transpire. The different disciplines have been very important because different disciplines have constructed pornography itself and individual works that could be considered pornography in very, very different ways through very, very different values of all sorts. And those disciplines include women's studies or women's and gender studies. They include the discipline of film studies. It looks quite different. The issue of what pornography is looks quite different if you approach it through history primarily, if you approach it primarily through, say, sociology, if you approach it via journalism, again, that original concept does connect it to reportage. If you approach it through art and through concepts like, you know, beauty, and you think that what people are doing with it is worshiping and meditating on things like beauty, mortality, social hierarchy, artifice, the very things that we've always, humans have long used art to meditate upon and worship. So it looks just tremendously different. And like a lot of the confusion about what pornography is, what it does, probably has to do with these cracks between these disciplines.
Yeah, it's the synthesis. The silos themselves are interesting if you look at the way each of these disciplines might reflect on pornography. But when you start to synthesize the picture that it draws of again, social order of human biology and human psychology could be fascinating.
Yeah, I agree.
Great stuff. Thank you so much. Richard Conte is a professor of media and technology studies at Communication Department at UNC Chapel Hill. He's going to give a lunch talk at UNC on Friday. It's called Pornography, Political Expression, and Free Speech. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, and Katie Barron. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.